so many of us have moved on from the COVID-19 pandemic after 3 years and have gotten back to normal, or at least accepted a new normal. That's even though 250,000 Americans died from COVID last year. A Penn State researcher says the new normal could be 90 to 120,000 deaths from COVID every year, unless more Americans get vaccinated. We're joined today by Dr. Maciek Boni, an associate professor of biology at Penn State University. Dr. Boni, welcome to the program.
Thanks very much, Scott. Good to be with you.
All right. So how did you arrive at that figure of 90 to 120,000 deaths each year from COVID?
Sure. So epidemiologists like myself, this is what we do for a living. We build mathematical forecasting models that are sometimes called mathematical models or epidemiological models. And the whole purpose is to assess disease risk for some infectious disease at some point in the future. Sometimes it's just in the near term, but sometimes you'd like to see whether, for example, HIV cases are going to drop over 1 year or over 10 years, and that'll give our public health system a chance to plan long-term public health strategy for these diseases.
So that 90 to 120,000 estimated deaths, and that's annually, how does that compare with other infectious diseases?
Well, the biggest infectious disease killer we have in the U.S. Is influenza virus. So we're a highly developed country. We have a great public health system. We have a high standard of living. So we're lucky in the sense that we don't have a lot of, for example, tropical diseases that cause large epidemics and that could potentially be deadly the way that they do in other countries. So influenza is number one. That's about 50,000 deaths per year in a bad influenza season. But after influenza, most of the other numbers top out in the thousands. So RSV, which is a respiratory infection of kids, could kill potentially 10, maybe 15,000 people a year. HIV, perhaps 10,000. And then everything else is in the thousands, the hundreds. So besides influenza, we don't have enormous infectious disease mortality in the U.S.
So when you're estimating up to 120,000 deaths each year, all those other infectious diseases that you just mentioned, that COVID would have more than those combined, correct?
That's right. So if you add up all the infectious disease deaths and even look at the CDC's database where they kind of double count things by putting them in multiple categories, just to make people aware as a matter of education, it's still hard to get to 100,000. So if we have a single disease that kills 100,000 Americans in a year, that's an urgent public health problem that we need to address.
And you're basing this on vaccinations, correct?
That's right. So the primary determinant, really the only important determinant of how many COVID cases, how many COVID hospitalizations and deaths we're going to see this year is COVID vaccination. And of course, every country, every region, every state decides this differently. But the difference between being 100% vaccinated and 0% vaccinated is enormous. If we get vaccination rates up into the 80 to 90% range, maybe we could quash COVID to the point where it's millions of cases and thousands or perhaps 10,000 deaths a year. But if we relax fully and just tell everybody to stop getting vaccinated, in that worst case scenario, which I don't think we're going to do, but in that worst case scenario, we could get up into the multiple hundreds of thousands of deaths again.
So what percentage of Americans are being vaccinated today?
Well, in those numbers that you quoted, the 90 to 120,000, that was analysis that we completed in December when the most recent annual vaccination coverage figure was around 49%. So that means that in December, right around Christmas, if you just looked back over the last 12 months, less than half of Americans had gotten the COVID vaccine. And that 49%, that's dropped now. So we're in March when we can look at February's numbers, and these numbers are now at 39%, which is lower, obviously. And if we stay at 39%, for example, these numbers, the death numbers annually could get up to the 140, 150,000 range. So it really is as bad as it sounds, and the vaccination percentages really do have effects that are that big.
So when you're talking about 49%, 39%, what's the time frame there? Because a larger percentage of Americans have had at least one vaccination. So what are you talking about with that 39% figure?
That's right. So that's an excellent point, and we do need to remind listeners that this is 39% over the past 12 months. So everybody's gotten vaccinated or everybody's had COVID. And after you get vaccinated or after you have COVID, you become immune. And what that really means is that your antibody levels go up to very high levels so that you probably won't get COVID at any time in the near future. But that's not permanent. Your antibody levels decline. So 6 months later, 12 months later, 18 months later, your antibody levels could be down to a point where you could get reinfected and could be at risk again of hospitalization and perhaps something more severe. So it's not only important to have high coverage, it's important to have high vaccine coverage every year in the U.S.
You know, a lot of these things have changed, the way we refer to them as the pandemic has gone on. Booster, for one. I mean, at first we were told two shots, then a third, then get your booster. So what percentage of people have actually gotten a booster, and what is a booster? Is that the fourth shot or what?
Well, I do empathize with people that it's confusing, and the messaging around COVID, especially at the beginning, was a little bit all over the place. I mean, part of this was that we didn't know in 2020 what all the recommendations were going to look like. I think we should scrap a lot of this old messaging and just refer to COVID vaccines as COVID vaccines and just simply recommend that everybody gets a vaccine every year. And you can call it a booster if you like, because you are boosting your COVID immunity, but it is just a vaccine, and once a year should do it if we're trying to get our entire population's level vaccination level up high enough so that we don't suffer a lot of COVID or a lot of COVID deaths.
I do want to ask a little bit later about, you know, how often people should get the shot. But first, why do you think that there aren't more people getting vaccinated?
Well, I think there's two main reasons. One is that I don't think the CDC has put enough effort into promoting and underlining the importance of vaccination. So this was done for other infectious diseases. This was done for measles, for example, in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. And we don't have problems with measles vaccination coverage. Kids get measles shots before they're 1 year old. They get measles boosters, which are just measles vaccines, before they go to school. And we're quite successful at getting these coverage levels very high. The CDC does a good job of promoting it, and we don't have any problems around it. So one basic problem is that the CDC hasn't planned or started a campaign to get this number up to the 90% range. I think the second problem is the disinformation that we have encountered over the last 3 years. So COVID is unique in that for no other infectious disease have we seen this level of coordinated disinformation campaigns, getting into people's social media feeds, getting into the press, getting into the mouths of TV personalities. And this, I think, has caused a lot of distrust in people. So one important thing, I don't know how this is going to be done, but one important thing is to beat back a lot of the disinformation that I think has caused people to worry.
Well, you just anticipated my next question. How do you do that? And maybe I'll phrase it another way. A lot of this is political in many people's minds. How do you get them to change their minds about vaccines when it has become such a deeply held political issue?
Yeah. So I'm not a political scientist. I mean, I'll just give you my general opinion as a person. I think it's extraordinarily difficult. I think destroying trust is very easy and building trust is very hard. And, you know, we've had 3 years of people destroying trust in public health agencies and the CDC and in just this, you know, very basic public good of vaccination. I mean, my suggestion would be to remind people that, you know, perhaps they should talk to their grandparents and have their grandparents tell them what it was like in 1955 before there was a polio vaccine, or what it was like in the 50s and 60s before people were routinely vaccinated for measles. The fear at that time was the fear of the disease and not the fear of the vaccine.
Well, I'm going to bring it even closer to today than the 1950s. You compare this to the HIV/AIDS epidemic in the 1980s, that that the CDC did do a good job, whether CDC or whomever it was, did a good job of getting the message out there of how to prevent or reduce the spread of HIV and AIDS. What did they do at that time, and why was that successful?
Yeah, that's right, and I'm not really sure what the reason is, but it is true that by the late 1980s, messaging about HIV was everywhere. So it was in schools. Campaigns about safe sex were both on TV, in school sex education classes. They were being promoted by the government. The risks of HIV were, of course, very well known. In the youth population at the time, I don't know who remembers this, but you had MTV, which was the main broadcaster of information, any sort of reliable information from to the sort of, you know, 15 to 25 demographic, and they had MTV news segments on the importance of protecting yourself against HIV infection. So we haven't even started any of these public health campaigns, and it's not, I don't think it's going to be one single one that does it. I think there's a range of these that are going to need to target different people in different places of different age groups.
You know, I still see public service announcements. I don't know whether they're paid for or not, I assume, so I'll call them commercials on television that talk about protecting yourself and getting a vaccination. But I have to admit that I even kind of tune them out now because I'm so used to hearing them. Is that what's happened here? Is that Americans, I started off by saying that we're so over this, but has it become like background noise to us?
Well, that's right. So we may have to wait a year or two before people are receptive again to this type of messaging around COVID. I think tuning out the message is fine as long as you're getting vaccinated. I tune out all the seatbelt warnings on highways because I just have my seatbelt on and I don't need another reminder. So if this is where we end up, that people don't need reminders because they're simply being vaccinated, that's fine. But currently at the 40% level that we're at, I do think we need to increase the public health messaging and not take for granted that the people are just going to do this on their own.
You bring up seatbelts, and it may be hard for many people to remember, but I remember back in the 1980s when Pennsylvania and other states required seatbelts to be worn, and the outcry of how it was taking away their personal freedoms, and you know what happens if I run my car into a lake? I'm not going to be able to get out of that seatbelt. That kind of thing. Same kind of arguments that are being made today against the vaccines.
That's right. And I think the initial reaction is reasonable. So these types of interventions are new. So people are concerned and people have questions, and we have an obligation to answer these questions. When indoor smoking began to be banned in California in the 90s and in the rest of the country in the 2000s, I think a lot of people felt that their right to smoke a cigarette was being taken away from them. And that's a good and a fine initial reaction, but it's worthwhile to remind people to talk to their parents, talk to their kids, talk to their relatives, and really assess patiently, quietly at home whether they do want to engage in an activity that's risky to themselves and then, of course, potentially risky to the people they love.
Our guest during this portion of the program is Dr. Malcek Boney, an associate professor of biology at Penn State University, who has estimated that the new normal may be 90 to 120,000 deaths from COVID each year unless more Americans get vaccinated. Dr. Boney, you mentioned several times throughout our conversation that this would be an annual vaccination, right?
That's right. This is the best way, at least for the next 5 years, to approach a strategy to COVID vaccination.
Would be much like the flu vaccine or flu vaccinations that we get today.
That's right, except flu vaccination coverage has stayed in the 30 to 40% range since I can remember. And it's fine in the sense that that level of vaccination coverage is good enough to get flu deaths down below 50,000 some years. But COVID, unfortunately, is 2 to 3 to 4 times as deadly as flu, depending what age group you're in. So it's not good enough for COVID.
Do you anticipate that our family doctors will suggest a COVID shot during a routine visit like they do flu shots?
I think this also depends where. So my doctors here in central Pennsylvania do recommend that. The CDC also recommends it. So if you look at the CDC's recommendations for different ages for flu and COVID vaccines, they're just always recommended for people. But there's a difference between putting some text on a website and saying that it's recommended and putting out serious outreach that gets to people in their homes or on radio stations or in other ways that's meaningful to them and that makes an impact.
One of one of the significant things that COVID, one of the reasons it spread so much is the mutations. Will different vaccines be required as the virus mutates?
Yes, almost certainly. So the reason that you want to vaccinate in the fall is that you are expecting a COVID epidemic in the winter, just like flu. And that's sort of like a 3 to 6 month problem. You vaccinate in September, October, and November to make sure that your wintertime epidemic is smaller or as small as it could be. For mutations, the problem isn't like a variant that might appear next month or in a couple months. For the variant problem, it's more of a multiple years problem. So I don't think every year we're going to see lots of new variants that render the vaccine less effective. But definitely on a 2, 3, 4, 5 year outlook, we do have to watch out for these variants. And then we've got a solution to this problem. We take the variant genomes, we update the vaccine, and the following year we've got an updated vaccine that's got the hopefully the same efficacy as the previous year's vaccine.
Help us understand that, because, and I know I keep going back to the flu, but for example, with the flu, we look at Australia, we look at the Southern Hemisphere to see what kind of flu season they had. Doesn't seem like we could do that with a variant of COVID.
Well, I'm not sure if we will or won't be able to do that. But we've been doing this for influenza for about 50 years, and it's true that we look at the Australia and New Zealand flu epidemics to get a head start on what flu variants might be circulating in our winter, which is just 6 months later. But I don't see any reason why we wouldn't be able to do the same thing for COVID. The surveillance networks that we've built over the last 3 or 4 years for COVID are much larger than the ones for flu. We know everything about all the variants on a week-to-week timescale, and it only takes a few weeks of laboratory work to determine if one of these variants is a little bit dangerous. So I think we'd have plenty of time to update the vaccine. Mm.
You've said that you think that the CDC has not done a good job of messaging. I almost get the sense that government overall has taken kind of a hands-off approach, that government wants to move on, much like the American people. Would you agree?
Yes. I think they're worried. I think they're worried about their own voters and the way that they might react if some of these reactions, if some of these recommendations come in too strongly. And maybe they themselves are fed up with it. And I understand that reaction. I mean, this was the worst thing we faced since the 1940s. So I understand that people want to just move on and get back to the old America that we knew. But at some point, maybe this year, maybe next, we're not going to be able to avoid this forever. I mean, we are going to have to start reminding people to, you know, put their proverbial seatbelts on, to get a COVID vaccine, and to get our immunity level in the population up to a level where we're not seeing lots of deaths every year.
One change that is occurring is that the vaccines won't be free as they have been for the past 3 years or the past 2.5 years. Will that be another hurdle for some people who are uninsured or just look at it and say, oh, it's going to cost me now. It's not free anymore.
Yeah, I think it will be. And I don't think it's a good idea to remove the financial support that the government had in place for the vaccinations. I mean, the vaccination, whether it costs $20 or $100, it's a lot better to spend that $20 or $100 than to suffer a COVID hospitalization that might cost you tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars in medical bills. But yeah, at the end of the day, we should not put this on ordinary Americans. This is something that the government should be paying for.
Are there other ways to stop the virus? I mean, and that we should be conscious of?
Well, sure. In 2020, in the pre-vaccine era, we came up with a lot of methods to reduce transmission. We closed schools and businesses. We had people wearing masks, and we canceled large events. And we did that because it was an emergency and we had no choice. But I don't think any of these interventions are reasonable things to be doing right now. I mean, a vaccination is 15 minutes of your time every year. It's easy. You do it once and you forget about it. Everything else is burdensome, cumbersome, and it really disrupts your daily life.
So basically what you're saying is that we can live a normal life right now. It's just that you need to get vaccinated on a yearly basis. That's the only difference.
That's right. 15 minutes a year. And if you think that's too much, just tell yourself that you're doing it for your grandparents.
Do you think that government, and by government, I'm talking about the CDC, realizes that the messaging is I don't know if I'd say not working, but not working as well as what we would like?
They do realize, because they provide all the statistics that allow us to count all these COVID deaths. So they're aware. And I think they are a little bit concerned about the vaccine still having emergency authorization and not full authorization. I think they're a little bit concerned about, as you mentioned, people being fed up with the messaging. So perhaps they're trying to slow down on the messaging before ramping it up, possibly this fall before the winter COVID and flu season. I don't know how concerned they are, but my guess is that they're aware and hopefully they're planning something for this year or next year.
So as an epidemiologist, I mean, we've talked about a lot of issues, but as an epidemiologist, what concerns you most looking forward?
What concerns me most is that the effect of some of these disinformation campaigns will have been permanent. We've never seen this before as a country. So we were not under the thumb of communism. We were not under the thumb of a dictator. We've never had these types of active disinformation measures splitting Americans up into camps and essentially, distrusting each other. So this is new for us. This didn't happen in any other period of our history that I can remember or know of.
Dr. Maciek Boni, an associate professor of biology at Penn State University. Dr. Boni, thank you very much for being with us today.
Scott, thank you very much.
A lot of good information there and something to be thinking about. Thanks for listening to The Spark on WITF, your home for NPR and discovering all things local. I'm Scott Lamar. Have yourself a great day.